Hey, good morning, Christ Church. Welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Man, I've missed you guys the last 3 weeks, but I just want to say a huge thank you for all the love and support for Tony, Jovan, and Doc preaching these last 3 weeks and bringing great messages to us. It's been a blessing to just be at home with the family and really focus on Allie and Emery and our new baby, Abigail. It has been awesome. And I will tell you what, I have such a deeper appreciation for the amazing moms that are in the world. Man, what you do every day, some of you taking care of all these babies, or I know dads are in the mix too, but man, I just so appreciate that. That is awesome and exhausting work. You guys are amazing. Well, today we are starting a brand new sermon series, and it's called Better with Money. I know you're like, man, Chet, you've been gone 3 weeks. Now you're going to come back with this series. Just go away again. But I actually think you're going to really, really like this series. Now, I want to explain why we are going to talk about this. And here's something important to know. I think that many times churches will do one of two things with money, is that for fear of being misunderstood, they will never talk about it. Now, here's what I think is dangerous about that, is one, that the Bible talks about it a lot. Jesus had a lot to say about it, and it's a huge part of our lives. Now, the second thing that sometimes churches can do is that they can talk about it in manipulative ways. Sorry, that's a hard word for me to say. And they can talk about it in ways that are unhealthy. Now, a lot of times, and maybe you feel like this, if you've been outside of church, that can be a criticism. Oh, the church only wants to talk about money. It only wants your money and things like that. But here's what I will say to that. I'm a church junkie. I love churches. On vacation, one of my favorite things to do is to go visit other churches. I've been in countless numbers of church services, and I've only been in one where I saw money being talked about in a manipulative way. One church, and I've been highly involved in churches since I was like 15. And, you know, me and the people that were with me, we walked out because it was wrong. It was unbiblical. It was manipulative. But in all these countless numbers of churches I've been in, I've only seen it once. And so I'm not going to do that. I promise you that is not my heart. If you know me, you know I'm completely against that. But what I do want to do is talk about it from a biblical perspective. Because I've grown up in this church. And every year, there has been good, solid, biblical teaching on how to manage money, how to have a healthier relationship with it. And because I've grown up in this church, I feel like I've benefited tremendously from that teaching. And I want to give you that same blessing. I want to give you that same opportunity. Because the Bible does have things to say about it that I think will be helpful to most of us. And what the Bible also tells us is that everything in our lives is actually spiritual, whether you believe it or not. And how we relate to things, how we manage the things that we have, what we do with the time that God has given us, all of that can be spiritually developing if we allow it to be. On these last couple weeks that I've been away, one of my main goals was to really catch up on taking care of some of the things around the house. Taking care of some of the stuff that we have, like lawnmower and car maintenance and all that kind of thing. But just like cleaning and organizing everything. Because as I was praying at the start of this year and thinking, man, what do you want me to grow in? What do you want to be different this year than last? And one of the things that I felt God speaking and directing me towards was like, you got to get better at taking care of stuff. Like your stuff. Because I know some of you, you are just anal retentive about everything that you own. I'm the complete opposite of that. And I'm not saying that's good. And one of the things that I felt like God was saying is like, you need to become a little bit more like that. You don't have to go crazy in it. But take better care, because this is about being faithful with the things that I've trusted you with. And so these 3 weeks away, I was cleaning up the garage. I was trying to clean all my equipment, trying to get it in good order, because I thought, this isn't just about cleaning and organizing. This is actually spiritual growth for me, because it takes a lot of prayer for me to actually begin to do that kind of thing. And I felt like it was a way to grow. And what I'm saying to you today is everything in your life is spiritual, whether you think about it that way or not. And so let's look at this powerful scripture today that I think is going to help us, not only with our relationship with money, but you're going to see that there's a lot that this applies to with our relationship with a lot of other things. And it's Proverbs chapter 6, and I'm going to read to you starting at verse 6. It says this, "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man." Now we're going to dig into this proverb because I think it is truly life-changing. And the author here, the great Solomon, he is making this contrast between the ant and the sluggard. And he's saying, hey, I know that you're probably living a bit like the sluggard, but I want you to learn from the ant who uses their time wisely. They look ahead and they realize, hey, the harvest isn't going to be here forever, so let's prepare now so that we can do the work now that is going to benefit us most later on in life and we can reap the benefits of it. And today I want to just summarize this whole proverb by a quote that I love. It's by a man named Gary Vee. He's a writer and motivator and kind of one of these self-helpy type podcasts. But he has a great line that I absolutely love. He says, "You need macro patience and micro speed." Macro patience and micro speed. Here's what that means. He means that many of us, we want macro change in our lives. I bet all of us want to be financially healthier. We probably want to be physically healthier. We probably want great relationships with our spouse, if we're married, with our kids. Or maybe we want to find that perfect person and we want to have a beautiful life together. We all want these big macro changes. And he says, you have to be patient with those, but you have to be highly urgent with the micro, meaning the little things that you and I do every day. That it's easy to be anxious about the big things in our life and be completely lackadaisical about the small things. But it's the small things that if you approach with a sense of urgency will create the macro change in your life and my life that we want. Let me say it another way. Instead of wasting our days and obsessing over our years, what if we obsess over our days and trust God patiently for our years? See, instead of sitting there and thinking, man, what's 10 years going to look like? What's 5 years going to look like? What's the next 20 years? What's the next phase of my life going to? And we get all anxious about that. What if we instead said, what can I do today that is going to help me tomorrow? And we obsessed about that like we can obsess about the big changes. This is what Solomon is telling us. The ant, they're not worried about tomorrow. Why? Because they're gathering it up today. And they know if they obsess with today, tomorrow will be okay. If I worry about what's happening, what I'm doing with these moments today, then tomorrow will essentially take care of itself. This proverb is so powerful. I want you to see what it's telling us. It's telling us that the future is not entirely random. It's not entirely unpredictable. And it's not entirely out of your control. See, Solomon is telling us, saying, hey, if you want a certain type of future, it's built by what you do today. So what are you doing today, church? What future are you and I building today? Are there going to be some things that are completely outside of our control in the future? Absolutely. No one could have predicted COVID-19. No one can predict a lot of things that happen in our life. But Solomon says, just because there are some things you can't predict, doesn't mean everything is unpredictable. And if I am building a wise life today, then I can reasonably predict it's going to yield a certain type of a future. If I am wasting my time today, if I'm being the sluggard who we're going to talk about in this passage, And I'm letting each day slip by, and I'm not growing, I'm not improving, I'm not investing in the things that matter in my life, then I can reasonably expect that I'm not going to like the future that's ahead. And that there's no one to blame but me. This, believe it or not, church, is one of the most empowering messages of the Bible. And if we take this seriously, and if we obsess over the micro and stop obsessing over the macro, we'll see that God can do some incredible things in our life. So let's talk about this. I want to talk about the two characters that we see in this verse, the sluggard and the ant. So let's first talk about the sluggard. Let's get the bad news out of the way first, if you will. Now, the author of this says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard." Now, when he says, "O sluggard," he's saying that you and I, reading this, are the sluggard. How insulting, Solomon, to call me a sluggard. What is a sluggard? Well, it's what it sounds like it is. It's a lazy person. That's what it is. Now, what I find so interesting about this is that if you read all through the book of Proverbs, you'll see that the author Solomon sees laziness as one of the great plagues of the humankind. That one of the biggest sins, we could say, that he sees over and over again in humanity is laziness. Now, I find that fascinating because as a pastor, a lot of people will confide in me. And they'll tell me about their struggles in life, and they'll be raw and authentic and all that kind of thing. But I cannot think about many times where someone has come to me and they said, "Chet, I struggle with laziness." People have told me, you know, they struggle with all kinds of things and all kinds of things that can be even embarrassing. But I cannot honestly think about someone who's come up to me and said, "Chet, can you pray for me? I'm lazy." And I find that fascinating. Because maybe our denial of that proves the prevalence of its existence in our lives. And I want you to open your heart to this today. Maybe we don't want to admit this at all because if you're like me, you hate the very thought of that word laziness. But maybe Solomon is pointing out something that is actually deep and real in many of us. That there is a form of laziness that we need to confront with God's help. Now let's begin to explain it as Solomon does. He says, the sluggard, what do they like to do? They like to sleep. I can get behind that. Amen. I like that too. But what does it mean? The sluggard focuses on finding pleasure in the moment instead of pleasure in the future. Right? They're more concerned with how can I make today easier instead of how can I make tomorrow easier. They're wasting their life away in the pursuit of pleasure instead of the pursuit of growth. The sluggard only changes through force. And that means that most change comes too late and becomes very costly. See, sometimes many of us, we operate this way in life, that we will only change when the pain of change is so great that it's more painful to stay the same than to change. But if that is your approach, church, then you're always going to be changing too late. Right? If my wife comes up to me and says, "I hate being married to you," then all of a sudden I'm ready to change. All right, well, what do you want me to do? At that point, it's not completely irredeemable, but it might be. It might be too late. And what I'm telling you today is that's not how you want to live. That's not what you actually want, but that's the way the sluggard is. They will only change until they are forced to. Only at those really high pain moments will they look at their life and say, "Maybe I should do something different." But what the wise person does is they're always evaluating their life, even when there's no one forcing them to. They're always asking, "Could I do this different? Could I love the people around me different? Could I approach life different?" And so they're way more proactive in change. The sluggard also sleeps through most of life. Do you notice that refrain of a little folding of the hands? The sluggard, what are they doing? They're chronically procrastinating. I've heard so many people over the years say, well, I do my best work at the last minute. Here's what all research shows. None of us do our best work that way. But the only reason you think that is because it's the only way you've ever done it. You literally don't know any other way. And that this is the slugger, but we justify our bad habits and our approach to life. And Solomon is saying, listen, you can do that, but you're going to end up with a future that you don't actually want. And here's the last thing. The sluggard is surprised by the future. They don't understand that God has given them creative power for their future. If you don't like where your life is today, here's the beauty of what the Bible is telling us. You can make decisions that will make it better. You can. God has given us creative force. We are not robots. We are people. That means we have free moral agency. We can make real decisions with real impact. Now, that is a blessing, but it's also a responsibility. And if we're not careful, we will cast away that privilege and that responsibility, and then we'll create a life that we're angry with God about. But God said, hey, I gave that to you, and that's what you did with it. And church, that's what I don't want for you or for me. I want us to lean into this wisdom, and I want us to become like the ant. So enough about the sluggard. And let's be honest, there is sluggard in me. Give me an amen in the chat if you're willing to be honest today. There's some of it in all of us, isn't there? I mean, how much more could we have accomplished if we would have not always slept in, but got up early and got after it? I know I would have accomplished a ton more in my life. And I bet the same is true for you. So let's talk about the ant. What does the ant do? Well, the ant has a vision for the future. The ant envisions a better future, and that vision directs their actions today. See, the ant is in summertime in this proverb, but they're thinking about winter. And they're saying, how can I have a winter that I can get through? How can I go through winter, but go through it in a healthy way? Well, I need to prepare today. And I need to start storing food and resources so when winter comes, I will be ready. And if you want to be like the ant, I want you to think about a vision for your life. What do you want your life to look like in the next 5 years, the next 10 years, the next 15 years, the next 20 years? However far you're willing to think, I want you to think this week and say, well, what do I want my relationships to look like? If you're married, what kind of marriage do I want? Do I want a marriage where we can't stand being around each other and we have to find all kinds of ways to be out of the house at different times? Do we want a marriage where we're just putting up with each other? Or do we want one where we love our time together, where home is safe and it's fulfilling? Well, if you want that, that's fantastic. But guess what? You have to start creating that today. Say, well, Chad, we'll work on our marriage once the kids are older. You can't wait that long. We'll work on our marriage once work slows down. You can't wait that long. Because it's getting created today. It's what you do today. I know, man, it's probably a pain to figure out how to go out for a date and build into that marriage. But guess what? It's not near as painful as having a marriage 5 years from now that you're like, how did we get to this point? Church, be like the ant. What is your vision for your health? Do you want to be healthy so that you can love the people with energy, so that you don't have to be going to the doctors all the time, so that you can live longer and serve God and your family more? Well, guess what? You create that future today. What are you doing today that's going to make you healthier in 5 years? You don't have to do some crazy crash diet. Just start small today, but say, I'm going to stay with it for the next year, for the next 2 years. Obsess about the micro, and the macro will take care of itself. Focus on that and determine where you want to be. What do you want your work to look like? Are you happy in the role that you're in? Do you want more? Maybe more means going back to school. Well, guess what? Start taking today one class at a time and stay with it. Maybe it will take you 3 years. Maybe it will take you 4 years. Who cares? 3 or 4 years are going to pass anyway. The question is, are they going to more prepare you for what you want, or are you going to be in the same place, but now with an even deeper frustration? Church, this is the wisdom of the ant. Our finances. Where do we want our finances to be? Do we want to keep living, for some of us maybe, paycheck to paycheck to paycheck and stressed? Or do we want some freedom to say, I don't have to be consumed with this all the time, and I can put my energy elsewhere? Be like the ant. What do I then need to be doing today to focus that in the right way? What does my service to God need to look like in the next year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? How is my life going to be useful to his kingdom and to his purpose? Don't wait for the perfect time. Don't wait till you have more margin in your schedule. Create that and see how God might build that in the coming time. Church, can I tell you that sometimes busyness can actually be a form of laziness? That we fill our lives with so much stuff that keeps our mind occupied, but here's what it really does. It keeps us from thinking about the deeper issues and purpose of our life. And sometimes we say yes to everything because we have no real priorities, because we haven't really thought through them, because we don't really have a vision of who God is calling us to be and what he's calling us to do with this one life we have. The ant knows the future that they're going towards. They may not know it perfectly and entirely, but they know it enough that it can help them decide today what they need to be doing. And that's what you and I need. You need a vision that is clear enough that it will give you focus for today. Here's the other thing that the ant does. The ant acts without any external pressure. Right? It doesn't have an officer or ruler or supervisor saying, do this or do that, but they are intrinsically motivated. They're saying, look, I want this. This is important to me. This is a value to me. This is who I want to become. And that's where, again, church, vision is so much more motivating, and it's a much healthier motivation than pain. If you will only change because of pain, you will never become who God wants you to be. We have to learn to change from vision. We have to learn to change when we don't have to change, but we want to change. That's where real growth comes from in our lives. If you will only change your finances once you're just overwhelmed with debt or things that you got to pay for, it's too late, church. It's way too painful and costly to do it that way. Start with vision and change from that point. The ant doesn't waste their day, but they leverage it for their future. While I've been away, one of the questions that I asked myself, because I feel like this sermon is as much for me as it is for anyone else, but one of the things that I've been asking myself is, what are the things I have to do every day to become the person I think God is calling me to be? And I listed out 7 things. I'm not going to share them all with you, but there are things like this. One of them is just real simple. Read the Bible and pray. If I don't do that every day, I can't be the person that God wants me to be. I'm also journaling because I'm trying to become emotionally healthier. I'm trying to understand more of who I am, and I just feel like that's healthy for me. Spending some special time with Allie and Abigail and Emery is part of those things too. Pretty much every day while I've been away, Emery and I have gone for a walk during the day. And, you know, it's just so fun to walk with a 2-year-old, and she's obsessed with rocks and stuff. But it's a way that I'm just saying, man, if I can do this every day, I can create some good quality time. And so, again, church, my point is yours will look way different. But what are the things you have to do every day? What are the ant-like things that will help you in time to become who God is calling you to be? Now, let me talk about financial things for a moment, because this is a sermon series about finances. I want to give you just a really helpful approach to being like the ant financially. Because the overall message of Proverbs chapter 6 is that he ends it by talking about finances. And Dave Ramsey, I'm going to just steal Dave Ramsey's 7 baby steps ideas. I think these are really helpful. These are something Allie and I have been practicing. And for some of you, these might be brand new to you. But here's how he says to build a healthy financial life. 7 steps. Here's the first one. Save $1,000 in an emergency fund. So that's step number one. Save $1,000, right? Your car's going to break down. Something's going to break in the house. The kids are going to need their braces tweaked, whatever. There's always something that's going to come up that's outside of your budget, and you need a certain amount of money for it. So begin by, number one, saving $1,000 for emergencies. Now, a flat screen TV is not an emergency. A trip to Cedar Point is not an emergency. These are things that are truly emergencies in our life. Step two, pay off all debt except your mortgage. If you own a home, pay off all debt. Allie and I, we're still on step two. We've been at it for a while. Student loans are a killer. Pay off all debt and use the debt snowball method. That's where you start with your smallest debt and you pay it off and you work towards your largest debt. But each time you pay off a debt, you put that money towards the next one. And so it keeps building on how much you're paying down on that debt. Baby step three, save 3 to 6 months of expenses in an emergency fund. So then make that fund a little bit bigger. Step four, invest 15% of your household income for retirement. Put that in your 401k or whatever your retirement fund might be. Step five, save for your children's college fund if you have kids. Step six, pay off your home early. And step seven, build wealth and give. Now, again, there's all kinds of different methods, but I think this is a great one. And I really encourage you to give it a try. Be like the ant. Maybe your finances are in a terrible place, but here's what I know. If you will be like the ant today, they will be better this time next year than they are right now. And you'll feel better, and you'll be more prepared. Now, as I end today, I just want to give you hope. If you're listening to the sermon, you're like, Chet, I am lazy. I struggle to stick with anything. I have these great goals. I have these great ideas. But then I always just give up at some point. I always just quit. I always just stop doing it. And I want to just encourage you. Here's what the Bible also teaches. God will help you in all of this. Jesus Christ died. He rose again. And Jesus said, I'm going away so that your life can be marked not by my physical presence, but by the presence of my spirit within you. And my spirit within you is going to help all the gaps, all the shortcomings, all the areas where you're not who you should be. And the great apostle Paul said it this way. He said, God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline. Did you hear that last one? Self-discipline. Self-discipline to be like the ant. Self-discipline to focus on the micro over the macro. And church, I want you to know today, if you feel like you struggle in that area, and I've been struggling in this area too, I want you to know today, God's Spirit, if you're a follower of Jesus, God's Spirit is in you. And it's a spirit of self-discipline. You can do this. You can change these things. I don't care what your track record is in the past. Here's what I know. The Spirit of God is in you to help you in this. You just got to take the first step with Him. And so would you do that? What do you need to do today so that tomorrow can be better? Let me pray for you. Father, I just pray that the Spirit of power, love, and self-discipline that you've promised to us, I pray, Father, that it would fill each and every one of us. Father, I know that there are areas in my life where I need to start creating a different path. There are areas where I'm being the sluggard, Lord, where I'm letting time drift away from me. I'm letting this gift of life be just wasted. in ways that are not pleasing to you. So God, I just pray for your Spirit to be in me. I pray for it to be in every person in our church. And I pray, Father, today that you could help us to obsess about the micro and to trust your work and your purpose, your process, and your plan in the macro. And I pray it would glorify you. I ask this in